goes to the west. Okay.
We're fine. We're normal now. All right. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjavi Hare. Prabhupada ki jai, Iskan founder Acharya. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anantagoti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Prem se kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha, Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Bhagavata Sayam Kunda, Radhakunda Giri Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavanam ki jai, Mathuradam ki jai, Jagannathaswami ki jai, Yamunamai ki jai, Srimati Lasi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hari Bol. Oh, pretty sure. You're still alive. It's fantastic.
So today we're going to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, first chapter, text 41. It's an interesting verse. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So, since you don't have the verse in front of you, I'll just read it. And then we'll go on to the word by word synonyms. Somyanucho chetam madapatantam ratre paretaya vidudruheya niryapito yena suritswapurya aham soputran samanuvratena. And so the synonyms are, and you repeat each word. Somya,
Somya,
O gentle one,
O gentle one,
Anushoche.
Anushoche.
I lament.
Tam.
Him.
Him.
Adapatantam.
Adapatantam.
Gliding down.
Gliding down.
Vratre,
Vratre,
on his brothers.
On his brothers.
Paretaya,
Paretaya,
death.
Death.
Vidudruhe,
Vidudruhe,
revolted against.
Revolted
against. Yaha,
Yaha,
one who.
One who.
Niryapitaha,
Niryapitaha,
driven out.
Driven out.
Yena,
Yena,
by whom.
Suret,
well-wisher.
Well-wisher.
Sapuryaha,
Sapuryaha,
from his own house.
From his own house.
Aham,
Aham,
myself.
Myself.
Swaputran,
Swaputran,
with his own sons.
With his own
sons. Samanuvratena,
Samanuvratena,
accepting the same line of action.
Accepting the same line of action.
So translation. O gentle one, I simply lament for he, Dhritarashtra, who rebelled against his brother after death. By him I was driven out of my house, although I am his sincere well-wisher because he accepted this line of action adopted by his own sons. So purport by his divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. Vidura did not ask about the welfare of his elder brother because there was no chance of his well-being, only news of his gliding down to hell. Vidura was a sincere well-wisher for Dhritarashtra, and he had thought about him in the corner of his heart. He lamented that Dhritarashtra could rebel against the sons of his dead brother, Pandu, and that he could drive him, Vidura, out of his own house on the dictation of his crooked sons. In spite of these actions, Vidura never became an enemy of Dhritarashtra, but continued to be his well-wisher, and at the last stage of Dhritarashtra's life, it was Vidura only who proved to be his real friend. Such is the behavior of a Vaishnava like Vidura. He desires all good, even for his enemies. So, again, the Sanskrit. Asambhyana suchetam madapatantam vratre varateya vidudruheya nirapito yena surat supurya aham suputran samanu vratena saom ganatya mirandasha gananjana shlakaya chakshur meditam yena tasmai shri gurve namaha. So, of course, Vidura is being referred to here, and Vidura is the half-brother of Dhritarashtra and Pandu. It's a very interesting story about their birth. So what happened is that once upon a time, there was basically no one, none of the, there was no actual person to get married and have any children to be the next prince or king in the kingdom. And so it was a problem because generally in the Vedic system they used to, interestingly enough, breed kings. You understand? Because they could, they hadn't understood genes, you know, that Kshatriyas, who are the administrators, the martial people, they actually had certain types of genes. You know, it's like everyone has a particular type of body according to their genes, which determine their guna and their karma. Guna and karma means their qualities and the work that they'll do. You know, you have the Varnashram system, Brahmacharyas, and I'm sorry, Brahmins, and then after that you have Kshatriyas, then you have Vaishyas and Shudras. So, there was no one to be the next, you know, king, and because someone had died, his name was Vichitravirya, and therefore, what happened is they had to call, actually, his wives, Vichitravirya's wives, actually were still there. The wife, the three princesses were there. Actually, two princesses, sorry. Ambika and Ambalika were there. And so there was a discussion, what's to be done to have a child? And in those days, it was actually allowed that the brother of the husband was was allowed to give his brother's wife or wives children if the brother was unable to do it. Everybody understands that. So, therefore, the first brother to be considered, or half-brother to be considered, was Bhishma. And Bhishma had taken a vow to be a lifetime brahmachari, so obviously he wasn't going to give in on that. And so then it was revealed that Satyavati, who was the queen mother at that time, had had a son before her marriage. And that son was the famous Shiva Vyasadeva. Interesting. And of course, the father of that son was Parashara Muni. Let's go back a little bit. So the way she had that son, it was that Satyavati was at that point rowing a boat across the river. And Parashara Muni got in the boat and he basically proposed to her. He said, "Let's have a kid." She said, "It's not a good idea right here in the middle of the river." So he created a fog, and Vyasadeva was born on an island, and therefore he's called Dvaipayana Vyasadeva. So she revealed to Bhishma that she actually had a child before her marriage, and that child was Vyasadeva. And then Vyasadeva, being a half-brother of the prince who had died, was able to give children to these two girls, which are Ambika and Ambalika. There were actually three in the beginning, but one was sent away because she was in love with someone else. So, Ambika and Ambalika, anyway, so Vyasadeva was called, Satyavati, his mother, called him, and because Vyasadeva was such a great yogi, his mother just had to call him once, and he came. That's a real yogi. And his mother said, "Vyasadeva, my son, come." And he came. He appeared before her. He said, "Mom, what do you want?" An obedient son. And she said, "I want you to give these two girls children so we'll have a prince who can later take over the kingdom." And Vyasadeva said, "Okay, but let's wait a year." Because he had just been meditating for a long period of time in the forest, and he had very long, matted hair that actually, when the sages went to the forest, not only did they have long, matted hair, but they took the sap from the trees and rubbed it into the hair. So you couldn't really comb it. Terrible, isn't it? Just like, it's very frustrating. Can you imagine, like, a lady with sap in her hair, can't comb the hair? Oh my God, I shouldn't mention this. But when we were young, sometimes the young boys in the school would put bubble gum in the girls' hair so they couldn't comb it. I never did that. So, Vyasadeva had sap in his hair, and he looked like a wild man because he'd been executing austerities for God knows how long. And he said, "You know, not a good idea. You know, when those ladies see me, they're going to just like freak out." And his mother said, Satyavati said, "No, now." And he said, "Okay, I'm warning you, it's going to be problems." And she said, "Anyway, we'll just chant Hare Krishna and figure it out later." So anyway, no, she didn't say that. So he went to the first lady, Ambika, entered into her chamber. And she was actually thinking that, it's going to be handsome. My husband's brother is going to be like a handsome kshatriya with big muscles and, you know, just like Rambo or something like that. Or the Terminator, I don't know. Whatever. someone who's really strong. And then in comes this Vyasadeva, who's a great pure devotee, but he looks like a wild man from Borneo. Seriously. And she's like, what happens is she goes, "Oh my God." She closes her eyes. Yuck! And anyway, and he gives her a child, and she's thinking, yuck, and having her eyes closed. And as a result of that particular conjugation, Dhritarashtra was born, who was blind. But not only blind materially, you know, externally, he was blind spiritually. And, Vyasadeva goes to the other lady, Balika. And she's been pre-warned, don't close your eyes. And so she keeps her eyes open, but she's so shocked that she turns white and starts shaking. And as a result, Pandu, who's white, you know, basically, and of ill health, is born. And so then, Satyavati, she's thinking, let's try again. You know, if at first you don't succeed, try again. So then she said to Vyasadeva, okay, go back to Ambika, the first lady who had Dhritarashtra, and give her another child. And Vyasadeva said, okay, Mom. So Ambika couldn't really handle it anymore. So what she did is she called for her maidservant who took her place. And her maidservant was actually a great devotee of Krishna. And the maidservant greeted Vyasadeva, washed his feet, was very respectful. And the child born from the maidservant was Vidura. And so it was described that Vidura was going to be basically the most learned man almost forever, you know, very learned in Niti Shastra, which means, you know, the Dharma Kshatriyas, you know, ruling a kingdom and everything like that. So, anyway, so then time goes on, you know, Dhritarashtra can't become king because in those days, if you wanted to be a king, you had to have your eyesight. You had to be like all your faculties. Reason for that is not that it was discrimination against someone with disability. It was because the king had to be the first one on the battlefield fighting. And you can't really fight that well. If you're blind, you know, you might start killing your own people. You imagine, huh? Oh, this way, king. And you'll probably get killed pretty quickly. Not really the best idea. Nowadays, of course, the kings or presidents or prime ministers, they can just sit protected in their bunkers, you know, like the underground shelters, as they order everybody else to fight. And so they're not really reluctant to have a fight. It's very easy, you just push a button and everything's taken care of and you can just sit and play golf and not worry about it. So anyway, so Dhritarashtra couldn't become king, and he was really upset since he was the oldest, and the oldest usually becomes the king. That's called primogeniture. Okay. Then what happened is that Pandava sort of like took over as king. He was very humble. And Pandu, he married two ladies, Kunti and Madri, and Dhritarashtra married Gandhari. Okay, so setting the scene for the whole thing. So Pandu, he basically at one point takes his wives and goes to the forest, and he's practicing his martial arts, and he hears some sound, basically, and he sees some deer, and he shoots some deer. And the two deer happen to be human beings, Rishi Kindama and his wife, who were just, you know, they couldn't feel enough love as human beings, so they took the body of deer. And they were having a relationship with the body of deer. And so he shoots them both. And as they're dying, by accident, he doesn't know. He hears them crying out. And as they're dying, they curse him. The Rishi curses him that, you know, if you even go near your wife, you die immediately. Okay. This is part of the Mahabharata. So, anyway, so he thinks, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then, so, you know, he pretty much stays away from his wives. They go to the forest. He actually renounces the kingdom at that particular point, goes to the forest with his wives and takes up what's called vanaprastha. And then he thinks, but I really want to have kids. And he talks to his wife and he says, you know, you can actually have children by a Brahmin. In those days, there were all these different, like, regulations. Nowadays, it's not recommended. You can actually have a child by a Brahmin. And then his wife reveals to him, Kunti reveals to him, that actually, I have this mantra that you can call the demigods and have children by them. And that mantra was given to her by Durvasa Muni when she was a kid. Now, she doesn't reveal that she had used the mantra previously and had a first child, Karna, who was adopted by a charioteer. She doesn't reveal that. So, but she just says, you know, I have this mantra, and her husband Pandu becomes really happy. He says, wow, we can have kids now. So, who are you going to call? Call for Dharma, or Yamaraj. And the first one, because he wants a son who's really like fixed on Dharma. So she calls for Yamaraj. Yamaraj comes, and is real Yudhisthira Maharaj is born, or not Maharaj at that point, Yudhisthira. Then he wants another one, and she calls for Vayu, and Bhima is born. And when after Bhima is born, she by accident drops him off a cliff. And she's thinking, I lost my kid, but he actually smashes all the rocks on the way down. You know, his body is as strong as stronger than iron. You know, he's invulnerable because he's Vayuputra. And then she calls for Indra, and Arjuna is born. So she has three kids. Meantime, her other co-wife, Madri, is thinking, I want kids too, so lend me the mantra. So she lends Madri the mantra, and Madri is thinking, I want two for the price of one. So she calls the Ashwini Kumaras, who are twins, and then she has Nakula and Sahadev. So this is the five Pandavas, okay. So the one problem is that Yudhisthira was born before Dhritarashtra's son with Gandharva was born. Because what happened is that Gandhara, Dhritarashtra's wife, had gotten a benediction from Lord Shiva that she was supposed to have 100 sons. And she hadn't given birth for a long time. And when she heard that Kunti, Pandu's wife, had given birth first, she got so angry she punched herself in the womb. And then out came a lump of flesh. You heard the story before? A little bit. Anyway, so that's why I'm telling. Some of the devotees have heard the story, but it's interesting. So out came a lump of flesh, and then she gets ready to chuck the flesh in the garbage, and Vyasadeva comes, and Vyasadeva says, no, let's take this flesh, divide it up into 101 parts, and put them in little incubators, little pots, little incubators with ghee and everything like that. And so those sons are incubating in pots, you know, who's your mother, a pot. So anyway, so they're incubating in these pots, and really, because Yudhisthira was born first, he's the one who's entitled to become the next king. And eventually, one of the pots, you know, I guess the little kid kicks the pot, breaks the side of the pot. And out comes the first son of Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana. And Duryodhana is accompanied when he comes out with the sounds of a jackal howling and thunder and everything, which is really the sign of an inauspicious birth. And so basically Vidura has all this astrological information calculated. And Vidura says, get rid of the kid. He's going to destroy the whole dynasty. And Dhritarashtra says, no, he's nice. And Vidura says, you got 99 other ones. You know, what's wrong with you? He's mine. You know, they just want to send him away. I don't think they wanted to kill him. I mean, some people say they wanted to kill him, but actually they should have just sent him away. So anyway, so then the other kids pop out of their pots somehow or other. And You got Duryodhana and his 99 brothers and one sister. The reason there was one sister is because the Gandhari actually wanted a girl too. So you got 101 kids there. Pretty good family. 101 in one shot. So the Pandavas. So the Pandavas are in the forest, and then what happens is they're with their father Pandu and mother Kunti, and eventually Pandu gets attracted to the other lady, Madri, and he starts to embrace her, and boom, he is dead as a doornail. And so what's going to happen there is that the Pandavas come back to Hastinapur. They were in the forest. They come back to Hastinapur, which is the kingdom of the Kuru. They're all Kurus, but sometimes it's divided up, saying that the Pandavas and the Kurus, but in fact, they're all the same family. So they come back to the kingdom, and during the time when they're back, Duryodhana and his 99 brothers are plotting so many ways to kill them. I mean, amazing ways, like poisoning them. They're poisoning Bhimsen by throwing him into a river, giving him some poison food, throwing him into the river. But actually, because he's Bhimsen, he gets bit by a serpent in the river, and then he goes down to the serpent kingdom and drinks this stuff, Rasa Kundala, that makes him as powerful as 10 million elephants. So all their plans, and you know, they have other plans too, like they send the Pandavas on vacation to Barnabat in a house that's made of like ghee and wax, and to burn them to death, and the Pandavas escape through a tunnel. I mean, this is the whole Mahabharata story. So all these things are going on. I mean, fast forward. Another thing that happened. I mean, so many things happened in the Mahabharata. Like they have a gambling match with the Pandavas, and the Pandavas lose everything, including their wife, and Duryodhana tries to strip Draupadi, the wife of the Pandavas, the common wife of the Pandavas, and then basically it's not working. I mean, to make a long story short, it's not working. And so right before the battle Kurukshetra, between the Pandavas and the Kurus, Krishna tries to make peace between both sides. And Duryodhana tries to arrest him. And then Krishna manifests his universal form to show him, you know, hey buddy, you're messing with the wrong person here. And then Vidura starts advising his brother, you know, please don't listen, Vidura's brother, half-brother, of course, of Dhritarashtra, please don't listen to your son. And Duryodhana says, who asked this son of a kept maidservant, that means like he's the son of just a maidservant, to speak? We should just like tie him up and throw him out of the kingdom. And Vidura, he understands this is the act of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He says, I'm leaving. You're not going to tie me up and throw me out of the kingdom. I'm leaving. And so Vidura, basically, this is really what we're getting to here. Vidura goes on pilgrimage during the whole battle of Kurukshetra. So he's not participating in the battle of Kurukshetra. So he goes on pilgrimage, and he's not participating. Neither did Balaram participate in the battle of Kurukshetra for another reason. And not that Balaram was thrown out, but Balaram actually didn't want to take sides because he had friends on both sides. In fact, Duryodhana was his disciple. So anyway, so this is what's happening here. So he's thrown out, and he took it as Krishna's mercy, and as a result, he meets Uddhava. And then much of the Bhagavatam discussion is between Uddhava and Vidura and also Maitreya. So the Bhagavatam is actually a story of stories within stories. You know, you have this Naimisharanya story where Suta Goswami is speaking to Shunaka Rishi, and the Rishi's there doing a 1,000-year sacrifice. And then They tell the story of Shukadev Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, and then within that, there's actually more stories, like of Vidura speaking to Maitreya, or speaking to Uddhava. So there's stories within stories within stories in the Bhagavatam. So this is one of the stories of the Bhagavatam. Very important. This is a prelude to Vidura and Uddhava speaking in the next chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, any questions or comments? Yeah.
Can you clarify about the Sunini Kumaras? Like, I for so long was like confused, thinking they're the same as like the sons of Brahma. They're not, right?
No. You're thinking of the four Kumaras. The four Kumaras are the sons of Lord Brahma who are like 5 years old, eternally, and they're preachers. They're preachers of Krishna consciousness, basically. And Ashwini Kumaras are the doctors. They actually are medical doctors. And there's many interesting stories about them, how they, you know, cure people's diseases. They, in one story in the Bhagavatam, they bring youth back to an old man, you know, who has a young wife and he just wants to enjoy with his young wife, so they bring him back to youth. You know, they go into this lake and they come back all young, like that. So they're quite expert. Actually, the Mahabharata's following story of the Ashwini Kumaras. There's one story, this is interesting, about how the gurus used to train up their disciples. I can tell this story. Not anymore, we don't do this anymore. So this story is as follows. It's in the beginning of the Mahabharata. Once upon a time, there was a guru with a disciple who was horizontally challenged. You know what horizontally challenged means?
He was chubby.
He was chubby, yeah. Nowadays you can't use discriminatory language. Mm-hmm. You know, the F-A-T word is prohibited. It's called fat shaming, isn't it? You heard about that before? So he wanted his disciple to lose weight. Basically. I was concerned for his health. I mean, you know, even nowadays, if you say, I'm very concerned for your health, you need to lose some weight, they'll take you to court. So, yeah. In fact, you know, just because you're concerned that they might die of a heart attack. So this guru, he was concerned. So he said to his disciple, look, go out and take care of the cows. You know, in other words, get some exercise. Go out and get some, you know, because the disciple was just up for eating. And so then the disciple started, let's say, I don't want to use the F word, fat word. Anyway, so he started getting heavier. And then the guru said to him, what are you doing? Why are you getting heavier? And the disciple said, because when I'm out there, I go begging too, you know. People give me all sorts of goodies. And the guru said, no, don't you understand? Every time, when you beg, you have to give to your guru. Begging is not for, you know, you're a brahmachari. You're not a rasta. You give to your guru. So, anyway, so then what happens, he goes at it again, you know, a few days later, and he's still like horizontally growing. And the guru says, what is happening now? And then he says, well, I'm begging, giving everything to you, but for myself, I beg a second time. As the guru says, boy, I got to watch the fine print on this contract. He said, every single time you beg, you bring back everything and don't take without my permission. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So then he goes out again. And then he's still getting horizontally challenged. And the guru says, what's happening now? You're not begging, I hope. He said, no, don't worry. He said, you know, I'm milking cows, so I get to drink some of the milk. He said, no, you do not drink any of the milk. You know, you gotta get all the fine points, you know, cross all your T's and dot all your I's when you're dealing with disciples. So anyway, so then he comes back, says, okay, Guru Maharaj, and he's still getting fat. And then Guru says, what are you doing now? He says, well, the calves are drinking the milk, and I'm just licking the froth, you know, from the cow's udder. Can you imagine the poor guy so hungry, damn hungry. He's so damn hungry that, you know, even this, you know, the froth, the cow going, the calf. You know, it's an amazing story. And so the guru says, no, the calves are just being merciful to you. Don't even do that. So, you know, what a heavy guru. Anyway, so he's concerned. He wants the disciple to be healthy, I mean, basically. So then the disciple's out there, and he's just like starving to death. You know, he doesn't know what to do. And then he just like sees a tree and sees the leaves. And, you know, when you're really hungry, you're ready to eat anything. You don't care whether it's healthy or not. So he grabs the leaves off of the tree and stuffs them in his mouth. And it happens to be that the leaves are poisonous. So he becomes blind. And being blind, he falls into a ditch. He's in the bottom of the ditch. And the guru is worried, why isn't my disciple come back tonight? And he sends all the disciples out, they go looking for him. And finally they find him in the bottom of a ditch. Now he doesn't rescue him from the ditch. Which is kind of interesting. Poor disciples are hungry and he's in the bottom of a ditch. He can't escape. And the guru gives him, instruction, tests him. This is a really interesting story. And he says to the disciple, pray to the Ashwini Kumaras. That's what we were talking about before. Pray to the Ashwini Kumaras and they'll help you. So he prays, Om Ashwini Kumaraya Namaha. And so the Ashwini Kumaras come and they give him some cake and say, eat this cake and this cake will cure your blindness. And so basically he says, no, my guru told me not to eat anything without his permission. And they said, your guru previously ate this cake, there's no problem. And he said, no, I've learned my lesson. So then they blessed him and gave him back his sight. And he lived happily ever after. As a thin devotee. So anyway, that's a story. Interesting story, how the gurus would test their disciples in the Mahavira. There's one another story of how a guru sent his disciple out to make sure that the agricultural fields were irrigated properly. So make sure the ditches are all right in the agricultural fields. And so there was a break in one of the ditches. So the disciple basically just lay down there to fill the gap. And the guru came out and saw him laying down there. He said, yes, I'm pleased with you. So you have all these heavy stories, isn't it? The beginning of the Mahabharata about, you've heard some of these stories before? So, yeah, gurus don't do that nowadays. They don't try to get devotees to lose weight. Because people are so attached in Kali Yuga to their tongues. So, any other questions? Yeah.
I heard another reason that Pandu called Dharma first was because he wasn't sure if it was religious to have children with a demigod.
Probably, yeah. That sounds good. Yeah, I wasn't sure it was religious. That's good. I haven't heard that one before, but that makes a lot of sense. So yeah, so he had the 5 Pandavas were opposed to the 100 Kauravas. And later on, of course, we know that Bhimsen took a vow to kill every one of the Kauravas, the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. And the reason he did that was because of the attempted disrobing of Draupadi. And he took a vow to kill Dushyant by opening up his chest. Oh my God. And drinking the blood. I mean, these were ferocious Kshatriyas. And this was... And so, Bhimsen actually killed the 100 sons of the Kauravas, the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. Anyway, so Vidura, he didn't want to see any of this fratricidal war, because, you know, he loved both sides. But he was partial to the Pandavas. He actually saved the Pandavas in many instances. For example, when the Pandavas were going to be burnt in that house of lac, which means like wax and ghee and everything like that, he sent them a message first, told them before they went there, that there was going to be a fire. But he had to tell them in such a, in a, like a covered way. And he eventually sent them a miner, someone to dig out a hole so they could escape through a tunnel in the ground. So Vidura was actually on their side. And Krishna was on their side. And Grandfather Bhishma was actually on their side, but he didn't take their side because of his vow, his so-called obligations to support whoever was the king. Now Bhishma actually took a vow to support whoever was the king and not to have children himself, because he arranged the marriage of his father with Satyavati. Probably, you know the story? Okay, I'll go back a little bit. Satyavati was supposedly a fisherman's daughter, but she wasn't. She was born from a fish, and the fish and the salmon of King Vasu. So Satyavati... All right, let's go back a little more. So Satyavati, because she was born from a fish, smelled really bad. Like fishy, like a fish market. But worse, like rotten fish. And so when she had that relationship with Parashara Muni, when Vyasadeva was born, she got the benediction she would smell good. He said she was called, in Sanskrit, it's called Ganda Yojana, like a good smell that went for 8 miles. Perfect perfume. So then anyway, so when Shantanu, who was Bhishma's father by Ganga Devi. Now the whole story about that I'm not going to get into, because that's a long story. But anyway, Bhishma was the son of Shantanu by Ganga Devi. When Shantanu saw and smelled this lady, Satyavati, he fell in love with her immediately. But they wouldn't let, the father, the fisherman, wouldn't let him marry Satyavati because he had already had another son who was going to become the next king. And so he became very depressed. Shantanu became very depressed. And at that time there was no medicine like, you know, antidepressant to help him. And Bhishma eventually finds out why his father is depressed. And so then he goes to the father of Satyavati and says, I want your daughter to marry my father. And the father of Satyavati, the fisherman, says no, because you're going to become the next king. And then he renounces. He says, I'm not going to become the next king. And then the father of Satyavati says, well, your son may want to become the next king. And so he says, I renounce getting married and having children. And that was an amazing vow for a Kshatriya to take. A Kshatriya is generally, they have several wives or many wives. Like Krishna had 16,108. So he took this vow and brought Satyavati back to his father. His father was so pleased. And also he took the vow to support whoever was the king or the emperor. So his father was so pleased that he blessed Bhishma with being able to live as long as he wanted to. In other words, voluntary death. So that's why at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows and he wasn't dying. I mean, anybody else had been filled with like 1,000 arrows would have died after the first 2 arrows, especially through the heart. So anyway, that's some of the stories, the Mahabharata stories. They're interesting, isn't it? Practically no one in the Mahabharata is born in a normal way. I mean, there are some, but you know, you have other sages being born from a pot, like Dronacharya, or from a clump of grass, like Kripacharya. I mean, it's all these different stories in the Mahabharata. It's really far out stories. And of course, then you have Duryodhana and brothers being born from pots, which is pretty far out. And the Pandavas being born from demigods. And, you know, practically Krishna's birth is the only normal one. And that's not quite normal because he becomes transferred and, you know, and all that other nice stuff. And he has all of his six brothers killed before him, and Balaram transferred. You know, it's all so many stories there. So any other questions about the Mahabharata? Yeah.
So Gurudev, like this is transferred from one generation to another generation.
Who is?
Genes.
Yes, of course.
So but not like Kali was said like Kali Sudar Sankova.
Yes, right. So he got mixed. Prabhupada said we're mixed castes of unknown origin.
Can you also let this
yeah. Yeah, generally. I mean, generally. Generally, the children take after the parents. I mean, don't you look like your mother? I mean, just like... I mean, not completely. But, I mean, isn't like when children are born, one of the first things the parents say is, he has your eyes. He has my nose. It's not that he literally has your nose, because you still have it on your face. But you... Don't parents say that sometimes? Look at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He has my ears. Yeah, because, you know, there are genes, and they do influence heredity. I mean, there are other things, there's epigenetic factors and everything like that. It's not just the genes. There's nurture and nature. You know, there's what you're born with and then what happens afterwards. I mean, you can have two twins who have identical twins, and they have different souls, and they have different desires, and they have different upbringing to a certain extent, and they may go in completely different paths. But just like we were speaking with Dr. Leeladhara last night, his father was an Ayurvedic physician. His father's father was an Ayurvedic physician. And it's not just that, you know, he got trained up like that. That's just the nature. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So your father was a farmer, right?
Yep.
So you're very attracted, he's very attracted to farming. He wants to do an eco-village and cow protection, right? And whenever even though he does business, even if I mention making money, he says, oh, I don't want to make money. He said, I'm renounced. You know, I just want to take care of cows. Right? So the nature follows, that's a physical nature. It's really connected. That's why, I mean, of course, we're not prescribing eugenics. Eugenics means like Hitler was thinking like breeding people or, you know, killing all people with the wrong genes. Actually, that started in America and in the UK. They used to, in America many years ago, before any of us were born, they used to sterilize people that they thought should not reproduce. And UK also did similarly, and that's, Hitler sort of learned his stuff from that. This whole point of, I mean, Darwin, in other words, Darwin's teachings about, of course, Darwin didn't know about genes, he knew about heredity. Darwin's teachings actually led to Hitler doing what he was doing, which is interesting. So, of course, he was crazy. He was crazy, demoniac, and all those other nice things. But there are genes, and they do determine inheritance. And some person's nature to a certain extent. I'm not saying completely. I'm not saying, like, you know, like Hiranyakashipu, he gave his genes to little Pallad Maharaj. But Pallad didn't become a demon because he had to go to association in the womb of his mother, Kayadu. So of the two, nature and nurture, nurture is more important than nature. In other words, what happens after you're born is more important than your genes. So we're not saying it's predestination, predetermination based upon your genes. I mean, there's there is something called lifestyle diseases. Lifestyle diseases are diseases like, to a certain extent, heart disease, diabetes, etc., like that. And sometimes you find people just blaming it on the genes. Now, the genes may indicate a predisposition to getting a particular type of disease, but they don't necessarily indicate you're going to get that disease. That may be determined in certain cases by what you eat, whether you exercise, your consciousness. You know, there's all sorts of factors. Like if you're really immersed in hating people, then it's more likely you're going to get cancer and other diseases. You know, so actually, there was a study that's in my book. Several studies I published in my book about how when people have loving relationships, they're more likely to live longer. Actually, there's one study where people who had dogs, they lived longer than people without dogs.
Yeah, dependence in general.
Yeah, dependence. But actually, the study was about dogs. You know, people who have pets, they actually live longer. So, anyway, so there is the genetic factor, the epigenetic factor, the environmental factor, the emotional factor. There's so many factors that indicate who we are, what we're going to be doing. You know, the spiritual association, like with Prabhupada. All right, any other questions? Because we're going to have to get ready to go.
How do you collaborate with Vedic society with people who are more like tamasic?
They were the sutra class by the nature, not by, you know, it's not that someone was destined to be of a certain varna according to their birth. If they show brahminical tendencies, like there's this whole story in the Vedas about this boy named Satyakama, the famous story, you probably heard the story, that he approached Gotama Rishi and he said he was born from an illicit connection, his mother was like a prostitute or something like that. So he approached this rishi, and he said to the rishi, I want to be your disciple. And the rishi only accepted Brahmins as his disciples. And so the rishi said, well, tell me who your father is, and that way we'll determine whether you're a Brahmin. So he went back to his mother, and he said to his mother, who's my dad? And the mother said, well, could have been this person, this person. So she went through about 50 different names. And he goes back to the guru and he says, mother doesn't know. And the guru said, you're a Brahmin, because you're telling the truth. That's what he calls Satyakama. That means truth lover. Truth lover. So it wasn't that someone was stuck in a caste. But let's say if someone was really tamasic, that means shooter. Because, you know, if you give someone who's really tamasic money, what is he going to do with money?
Spend it somewhere.
Spend it on
get
what?
Get drunk.
He'll get drunk. You know, you give him money, he's not going to go and buy an iPhone. maybe he will, but anyway. he's not going to, like, offer some nice fruit to Krishna. He's going to get drunk or do something, you know, to spend all of his money. Just like there's a country that I work in, where, you know, there's a lot of shooters. And so as soon as they get money, they get salary. It's gone the same day. There's no question of saving. So in that case, in the Vedic society, they would be taken care of by society. And not really given money, like, because then they would just, like, misuse it or hurt people or do something bad. So they would be given everything they needed and also they would have to work, you know, in the fields or something like that, rather than, you know, in Vedic society, lazy persons weren't allowed in any caste. They weren't allowed to just sit back and get government money and just enjoy life, unless they were old. I mean, disabled, old, you know, that's a different thing. But they had to work. They were sent, like Prabhupada used the expression, they were sent to the plow department, you know, for plowing the land. So they were sent there, and then that's how they were engaged.
How can you, like, education for someone who's not ethically or morally sound?
If they were interested in education, they were given education. But if they weren't, they weren't forced to have education. I mean, like nowadays, you know, some people by nature, they just don't want to be in school and they create havoc when they're in their school. I mean, you see that. I mean, I've been in some schools giving a class or something like that, and they're torturing the poor teacher. And nowadays, the teacher's not allowed to chastise them anymore. In the old days, you know, in the old days, like when I was going to school, I got sent to the principal all the time. But I mean, I'd like to learn, but, you know, I was disobedient. I was, anyway, I have this thing about teachers, you know. Teachers and Jewish mothers and things like that. Anyway, so, I had this, anyway, rebellious streak. So, but anyway, but they were, it's, why should someone be forced to learn? They can work and be taken care of. I mean, what's the value of giving a lot of education to someone who's going to misuse it? It's like, I don't see the value. If they want to, it doesn't matter who their parents are. If they want to learn, then you send them to school. Sure. But if the parents are not interested and the kid's not interested, and not just like he wants to play, that's another thing. Then, but if it's obvious that he's not going to learn, then he can work and contribute to society in a different way. I mean, everybody has a part to play in society. And the education was different depending upon someone's nature. Like the Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmins were all like educated in spiritual stuff. So if someone had the least inclination, they got educated. But if someone didn't have the least inclination, what's the use? What's the use? And then if you educate everybody, everyone becomes too educated to working on the land. And then what you have right now is the machines do all the work on the land. Or in America, you have to import workers, because the Americans, isn't it?
Then the Americans complain about it.
They complain about the Mexicans coming in. They do the work they wouldn't do. And then, you know, some years they haven't been able to import enough Mexicans for a variety of reasons, and the apples have just rotted on the trees. And in Europe, they import the Eastern Europeans to do all the agriculture and the construction. Like if you go to Germany, it's the Polish people doing the construction. It's not the Germans. Only the Germans will supervise. It's the Polish people. If you go to America, it's the Mexicans. You want to have someone do drywall? You call for the Mexicans to do the drywall. I mean, you can have Americans do it, but it's like 20 times the price. But, you know, so it's... The point is when you over-educate the people, then you lose your workforce, basically. And they're not happy either. They just get, you know, they just come to the cities, get drunk, and do all sorts of crazy things that don't contribute. You know, people just... And it's very hard, when someone's sophisticated, it's very hard to get them back, even if they're a shooter, to get them back in the farm again. We have, like, in the Western world, we have so many ISKCON farms, and you can't get people to work the farms. Because once they've been to the city, they don't want to go back to the farm. Does that make sense to me? So, yeah, everyone should be happy. Sufficient prasadam, sufficient goods. You know, we're not against anybody. But let everybody work according to their own nature, then they're happy. If you do work according to someone else's nature, you'll never be happy. Okay, I think we have to end. Oh my God. All glories to Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.